Okay. In which case, let us then move on to the reporting back on the materiality groups. And I'm going to be very boring and start at number one. So, Begonia, would you like to report back on where your group of standard setters with the odd auditor thrown in got to?
Okay, thanks, Joanna. Well, the first question, multiple question, is about the definition or description of materiality in the conceptual framework and at what extent we think that this should be there or not. That was our idea. And, well, we started by considering that we were informed that there are two different views. Some of them, some people don't want to have a definition. Some others want to have a definition or even more details. And we wonder if this was related to some particular jurisdictions in the way and because they don't have a proper understanding of materiality. That was the reason of that division or of that requirement for more explanations, or if the division was associated with a particular type of stakeholders. But it seems that there is not such a reason. So, after talking about this, we unanimously agreed that there is no harm in having the explanation or definition about materiality in the framework. And if this is the case, why should it be taken out? So, moreover, we don't distinguish between definition or explanation. So we were not aware about any consequence of having a proper definition or an explanation or description. For us, it's the same. It's in the framework, so that's all. The only things we mentioned were that if this idea is also maintained or mentioned in some other in the standards, then it was important to keep the same wording. And we suggested perhaps a change in the explanation or description of materiality, and instead of using the word could, perhaps it would be better to use would. So information is material if omitting it would influence decisions instead of could. That was our suggestion. And we don't think there is need to add more explanations or details about it. Regarding the second question, how the ISB can help preparers, well, we think that materiality is judgmental, it's behavioral, and the only thing that can be done is have an educational guidance in order to prepare, to help preparers to exercise judgment. In some way, we associate the idea of materiality, of the problems linked with a materiality with other problems of interpretation. And it could be the case that different institutions or jurisdictions have different views, but the ISB is committed to have principles and not rules, so we don't think that it's possible to give details about how to apply materiality. We discuss about the users of financial reporting, and we think that with the broad group that now are the primary users, current potential investors, including creditors, but particularly those that don't have the right to get directly information from companies or firms, or it's difficult to suggest how preparers can make decisions about materiality without knowing who could be the users and the decision. So we think that it's not possible to add more details. So going to question three, our only suggestion is educational materials that is not authoritative. We think that this is the way to provide guidance to preparers, and we are aware that this will not follow the due process, but this is not an issue because it avoids being considered as authoritative. So that's, for us, this is a good thing. And regarding other ideas that could also help the ISB, We also thought about having the ISB could be like a sort of facilitator of meetings or other events where ideas about materiality are discussed, explained. Perhaps it could be established a group that will organize these sort of discussions or workshops in order to provide more ideas about how materiality should be understood. And, well, I think this is a summary of our discussion, but if any other person of the group want to add something else, it would be great. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Begonia. Anybody else in Group 1? Isabel wishes to add something?
Sorry, yeah, it's just clarifying one thing. When we were talking about having non-authoritative guidance and being aware that that wouldn't go through the due process, I think some of us felt that we did need some kind of public discussion and proposed that any of that type of guidance could be discussed within the various advisory groups that the ISB has, you know, be it the CMAC, the GPF here, and so that there's to get a broad consensus, which is not a due process consultation, but is some form of public discussion.
Okay, thank you, Isabel. Anybody else from Group 1 want to add anything to that? I'm going to let each of the groups present, and then if there are any other, if you like, probing questions where we've come up with something different, just to follow through if we have time at the end. So Group 2, Charles.
Our group were predominantly, but not exclusively, investors, and there was, as a result, there was sort of widespread agreement. There's certainly general agreement with the characteristics and the general principles of materiality as outlined, and in that sense, I guess, even though we didn't precisely discuss it, we would be in agreement with the schematic of the materiality decision chart on page 25. We did believe that it was appropriate to have a definition within the conceptual framework, and that it should be left in there, it shouldn't be taken out. Interestingly, the concern of our group was that was more about the disclosure of non-material information, that we perceived that was a bigger problem than the absence of disclosure of material items. And we put that down to the fact that it's, in a way, the line of least resistance, just keep adding to information. It's very easy to do that. It's safe, it's risk averse, but does it meet the needs of investors? And our view was that it does create too much clutter. We were of the view that preparers are in the best position to make judgments about what is material, but they would also have input from auditors who've got a role to play, and obviously preparers would be conscious of the attitude of regulators and the statutes within their own jurisdiction. Again, those other pressures tends to reinforce the temptation to add more disclosure rather than less. If in doubt, leave it in. We're of the view that judgment does need to be contextual. It is entity specific, and the process can't be mechanical, so there ought to be a regular review effectively of what is of what is material, but there ought to be a high level of consistency for a particular entity from one year to the next. We did recognise that one of the dangers in the system is that there are good corporates and there are bad corporates, and the bad corporates will want to not disclose information, and particularly to hide bad news. So we concluded that there is a problem with materiality. It's not in the definition, it's more in the application. And in that sense, there is some role for the ISB to play. In terms of should that be guidance or education, we leaned very much to education rather than specific application guidance, but there is concern with that of if it's not specific guidance, then it doesn't go through the same due process that it otherwise would. We used a metaphor that in some ways the framework for thinking about materiality is not that different from considering ethical dilemmas and organisations that I've been involved with where there is effectively training, just reminding people of their obligation to be ethical, giving illustrative examples. You can't be precise in terms of what the dilemma may be, but you give people a framework which is then understood through illustrative examples, and that may well be sort of the right model for the ISB. We recognise that there could be some standards where there may be some more explanation of materiality should be included, but it should always be consistent with that which is in the conceptual framework. Strong desire to avoid bright lines. We then sort of examined the driver of why this topic is on our agenda, and that is that despite a focus by many people on improved disclosure and reporting, and no one disagrees with that objective, it's a little bit like, you know, we're all in favour of motherhood, there's seemingly little progress being made, and in many respects we're going backwards. So it sort of begged the question, why is this so? And we concluded that ultimately it is about behaviour. So if we want to have improved disclosure, we need to work on changing behaviour. We ran out of a little bit of time, but we just sort of posed the question, well, is it a matter of enforcement? Is it incentives? Is it in the packaging of the standards? And ultimately we recognise that behaviour in this area is hard. It's not easy. Judgment requires detailed knowledge and understanding, but it also takes courage, and ultimately courage will come from leadership within the organisation. So one way in which the board may facilitate trying to change behaviour would be to find champions of good or better disclosure, and use them as examples, not necessarily the board advocating their reporting, but make it clear that there are good examples out there of improved disclosure, companies that are exercising judgment about materiality and avoiding clutter and avoiding disclosing items that are not material. And just as an aside, we didn't discuss this, but I did make some reference to it in our June council meeting, and I'll bring it up again, and that is that the Securities Commission in Australia have an annual conference, and it was held earlier in the year. And to me, the most interesting presentation at that annual conference was a joint presentation by Martin Wheatley, Chair of the FCA here in the UK, and Greg Medcraft, Chair of the Securities Commission in Australia. And they basically, not quite as bluntly as I'm going to say it, acknowledged that the regulatory template that market regulators were using was not working, because essentially it worked on the principle of transparency. Transparency was delivered through disclosure. Through that disclosed information, investors would have the necessary information to make rational decisions. And they came to realise that there is such a thing as information overload, and therefore that disclosure becomes less useful. And equally, that not all investors will make rational decisions even if they have all of the right information. And so they were beginning to experiment using principles of behavioural economics or behavioural science. So again, as an example of regulators recognising that if you want to improve performance and behaviour within the capital markets, then regulation or disclosure is not necessarily the panacea that it's often been regarded as in the past, and that one needs to think more scientifically about how do you actually change behaviour.
Thank you, Charles. And what he did say to me earlier, and I'm going to say this, is, and he alluded to it, that most of the group were in agreement, but there was an odd auditor thrown into that group that didn't necessarily align with the rest of the group. I'm allowed to say that as an ex-auditor. Anybody else like to add anything to what Charles has said from that group in terms of reporting back? No, you obviously did a pretty good job there. So, from the preparer's perspective, Micheline?
Okay. So, question number one, I guess, do we need a definition from the EASB or from the regulators? Generally, the group was not favorable to a definition by the regulators, basically because it would vary by jurisdiction, and I say maybe some dangerous from some jurisdiction. Some would like to see ASB do provide a definition, and those that generally people like the current definition in the conceptual framework. Recommendation is, of course, to keep it very flexible. Those that did not favor definition typically favored more guidance or educational, and so in general, people were in favor of something being done. So that's introduction to question two. One thing that was mentioned, that how important it was for each of the preparers to have a formal internal framework to develop a materiality, so they have a solid base that could be presented, and that guidance or notes can help developing that internal framework. Definition, guidance, notes can act as a protection if later some issues are uncovered while assessment was made in good faith, because in hindsight, often it's difficult to defend yourself, but if you had something that is official there, that would be helpful. Guidance case studies were suggested. On the education front, the education on the thought process that was very important in coming up with materiality. Sorry, one person suggested that it would be great to get some stats, maybe from the ISB, as to how much often either regulators or auditors challenge materiality, and so whether it's an issue or not. And as education is developed, that the ISB should be aware of the differences in the sensitivity within jurisdictions, something that might be obvious in one may not be obvious in the other one, and that's because of different users, too. There was some discussion on checklists. Some people would say, well, it's still not bad. I mean, you can have a checklist, and it would be okay to say to some of the items, well, it's not material, and some people were feeling comfortable about that. But some other caution, and I'm going to quote, the list of coulds is dangerous because once you start with could, everything could become could. In terms of providing some guidance, it would be great if it would be aligned with other bodies, including FASB, so that everybody agrees on what it is. Even if all of this is made, there was some feeling that needed to review the standard language, because that would attack the problem at the source. There seems to be feeling from that from the standard there's this urge to get a lot of information, and that should be addressed at the source. In terms of what should be done in terms of encouraging other parties, it was mentioned that it would be great to if we sensitize regulators or auditors so that they could start pointing at non-material items to take out. And I think that would, for some, a dream come true if that could happen. Going to the IASB to help them sensitize auditors on the fact that too much guidance is not necessarily a good thing. And then somebody that wants to keep being anonymous suggested that maybe the solution is to have a section at the back of the note that's called material, but for only for regulators.
Well, unless anyone else from that group has any comment, I will give the regulators the right of reply to that last comment. So, Zinga, would you like to start off there?
Okay, so we had a very interesting discussion, a combination of regulators and also persons wearing the auditor hat. But what we felt was that, yes, there is indeed a need for a definition because it fosters comparability. But there should be a baseline definition which is compatible with what securities regulators are looking for. So at the end of the day, this should not be done in isolation. You really want to be able to have this definition be a baseline for other people to be able to rely on and therefore in turn getting a little bit of comparability. Otherwise, you're going to have everyone having their own definition and comparability is going to be lost. So I think ultimately we want to have a definition which can meet the needs of more than just us as ISB, but also the regulators. There is a lot of caution against having bright lines, so definitely don't want to have bright lines. There was recognition that regulators are more comfortable with bright lines, but we want to stay away from bright lines. I think we all have that consensus. And the definition should be robust. We felt that the fact that we are having this discussion means that something is needed. So there needs to be more clarity in the definition, but still sticking to a principles-based definition. You want it to reflect qualitative as well as quantitative, but once again, staying away from bright lines. We also considered that we want to go beyond just what is material to investors. There was recognition that the investors are not the only stakeholders that we should be taking into consideration when you come up with that definition. That once again speaks to the fact that there are multiple users that the definition should be catering to. Then when we get to the second question, or second set of questions. So need for more guidance in applying materiality versus guidance being perceived to be doing more harm, and how can the ISB help people to exercise judgment? We think that ISB can actually help by providing more education material, but at the same time, probably in certain standards, you probably would want to have some additional guidance there as well. So we're saying look at both aspects, not just education material, but also trying to get some additional information in the standards. So you can tell this is a regulator hat coming on. Once again, however, avoiding bright lines. Very important to avoid bright lines. Mm-hmm. We agree that there are different persons have different backgrounds, and so different jurisdictions also have different legal backgrounds. So this, in turn, is going to influence how people perceive what the various requirements are in that definition and the approach that people will have. A classic example was in the case that came up in our discussion was in the case of Japan. There's a lot more comfort in quantitative versus qualitative. And so you're going to find that in various jurisdictions, people have different comfort levels, which would influence how they interpret and what they would want out of a definition. We also felt that the question's coming up, probably there's a need to have more done to find out what is causing the underlying issues. Why is this question coming up again and again? So probably some more work in that area would help us to really define the underlying issue, to see whether it's really a case of the definition itself that we currently have, or whether or not it's just by virtue of people with different backgrounds, once again, driving these questions. We felt with question three, if ISB did develop guidance, do you think it might be best in the form of education material or do those applying IFRS need more direct requirements? So as I said initially, we believe that both would be appropriate. once again, staying away from the bright lines, but we also felt that it's all about, as Charles mentioned earlier, it's about changing behavior. That's one of the key components of this. And we felt that if you have information being strategically challenged, so not that you're just challenging situations where you want more information, but also challenging situations where there is too much immaterial information. Having those aspects of disclosures challenged could influence people and change their behavior, encourage people to really lean towards reflecting more material information and less immaterial information. We also brought up, again, the fact that regulators tend to prefer bright lines. So once again, it's changing the behavior so that people would be more comfortable with a more principles-based approach. And this leads now into question four in terms of what can the IASB do to provide a catalyst to encourage other parties involved to facilitate the use of judgment and materiality decisions. We felt that one of the things definitely could be raising awareness and be an active participant in debates. You can also bring down the what we just mentioned about challenging immaterial disclosures. You know, so if you have a fora, one, I think it was Begonia or Micheline who mentioned, you know, having participating in discussions whereby you're really challenging practice that is not really conducive. So, for example, having the immaterial information being challenged, and that once again would help with change in behavior. And I don't know if any of my team members want to mention anything else.
No, silence. So you've obviously done a pretty good job there. And thank you all very much for that report back. Alan, we're giving Alan the luxury of sleeping on this for him to summarize it and report back to us tomorrow morning. But Alan, in the meantime, are there any specific, if you like, probes that you would like to make of any of those report backs to give you a little more understanding of what's been said to help you with your summary? And perhaps whilst you're thinking, were there any other council members want to probe what one of the other groups said to help your understanding?
I have one question. I think the summary's been excellent, quite clear messages. Zinger, there was just one issue in there you raised about, it was about providing education and some specific guidance at the standards level. And there are two ways we could do the standards level. One is the issue we discussed in the presentation about making much, giving much clearer relevance guidance, or is it about, for example, when you get to something like related party standard, you provide more, I guess, guidance on digging down a little bit lower, if that makes sense, because related party transactions are probably something where you'd have a lower threshold, so you're providing some practical guidance at that type of level. So there are two different types of things. Did you have one particular type in mind?
I think what we were talking about was trying to provide guidance in a way that it gives more context to what you're looking for in that particular area. In fact, one thing came up with respect to providing an example that came up in the discussion. So you give people an idea of what you're looking for with respect to what would be considered or could be considered to be material.
No, it certainly strikes me, and I don't know, I mean, oh, sorry, Thomas, missed you.
Just to add a little bit more information about the discussion we had in the group, we said educational material is the key. That's the first one. The second one is we should look at those core issues in specific standards, so not in every standard. You should have these examples. So we stay with the principle based, but you go, let's say, for very specific areas where you think that you should have, let's say, the normal case as a disclosure, define a little bit more in, give more precise information what you expect as the normal case. And the other thing, I think, is the question whether you should use material, I mean, during the whole standards in the same way. I think that's we didn't discuss that actually at the end, but I think that was the basic assumption that we should use the same definition all over the place. But this the thing about these examples was really concentrating on those standards where you think that it's really necessary. It shouldn't be all over the place.
Alan, without wanting to do your summing up for you, it strikes me that there are, from what I've listened to on that, that there, because you asked the question about what are the problems with materiality right up front, that that's one of the issues. And it strikes me that two key themes, I think, have come through from all of the groups to greater or lesser extent. And one is it's about behaviour. And so what can be done about changing behaviour, and whether educational staff or the forums that were talked about, you know, that seems to be a key thing. So it's an understanding and behaviour. And then I think that from all of the groups again, including the regulators, is the acknowledgement that over-disclosure is a concern. And certainly I listened into a bit of the discussion at the regulators group where talking about, well, when we talk about over-disclosure, are we talking about over-disclosure just because we want to reduce volumes? Or what is the reason that we're talking about over-disclosure, and what are we trying to achieve here in terms of the materiality and what's disclosed? And to me, that's a really... So it comes back to identifying the problem, and that it's not just too much information because it's too much information. Why is it too much information? Because you're hiding the material relevant to the user's information. And I think those are key themes that have come through from all of the groups, is certainly what I've heard. And I think quite, and as I say, I don't know if that's any different than anything you've heard from anybody else. Okay, any closing comments on materiality? Any material closing comments? Well, I'm going to ask one question, and that is about the makeup of those breakup groups, that we deliberately, for this topic, actually split you into your, if you like, your background, so that we did have, as I said, with, and I think it was me throw it being provocative, and that there ended up by being, I don't know, five auditors or something. Ada said to me, do we have five groups? I said, nah, let's put one of them into each of the groups and see what happens. So, sorry. but do you think it's useful to have something like this by groups? And there are quite a few noddings, as opposed to having the potential more, if you like, robust discussion if you're all mixed up. Any comments on that? Michael?
I think I would be flexible, because it depends on whether it's material to the issue that you're discussing.
Thank you, Mike. Tomorrow's session, by the way, on risk is completely and utterly random.
I think it depends on the topic. If we expect commons to differ by stakeholder group, I prefer to have the breakouts by stakeholder group, because then you don't get a diluted everyone's views.
Yeah.
While if it's a topic like risk tomorrow, where it may be rather individual views than stakeholder-driven views, then I think the mixed approach is better.
So you're happy with how we did this particular one. Lothar?
I really like the idea of having the homogeneous group to develop to some degree the view of that type of preparer, user, whatever, and then have those views be communicated in the whole room. I think that I really like that a lot, except you gave us two auditors.
One would have been okay, but two was just too much. Okay, on that note, I think we have materially done with the day. So what if we take a break, and I have to fess up to this. I said I was cold earlier, so they turned the heat up, and I think it's probably a little warm now for everybody. So my apologies. So if we, that's the close then of the official, if you like, meeting for today. We have got dinner, so we have drinks at 6 o'clock, and I think I'm right in saying that they're out where coffee was earlier, so on the balcony or whatever it is, and then dinner at 6:30 in where we had lunchtime, I presume, again. So, sorry. 5:30 and 6. Apologies. I've obviously got an old agenda that I printed off because I've got 6 to 6:30. Okay, 5:30 is drinks and dinner is 6. Apologies. So that is the situation. And I am assuming that those people who this is their last meeting who have not told either me previously or Mikey that they wanted to speak do not want to speak this evening. So I currently have, I think, 7 people who wish to say a few words. So what we will do is that we will have a few little speeches just after, between the entree and the main, or between the first course and the second course, for those that call entree the main course. So we will do that. So I think that sums up. Does anyone else have anything they wish to say before we break? All done. We'll see you for a drink at 5:30. Thank you. Yeah.